Radio Free Palmer presents a special feature presentation with community reporter Emily Forstner.
I'm Emily Forstner, and I confess I'm a wannabe biker. So some days I find myself at backcountry bike and ski in Palmer, just like pretending. I even went so far as to buy a fat tire bike this winter. Backcountry owner Tony Burbrick told me that the guy I really wanted to talk to was David Cheesham. Cheesham, Tony said, had transformed into a real long-distance biker. He was retiring, selling the bookstore, and was going to bike the Lewis and Clark Trail across the western United States. Really? I said. The bookstore guy? So, here I am today with David Cheesham. Welcome, Mr. Cheesham. We know you, Mr. Cheesham, as the owner of our beloved independent bookstore, Fireside Books. And I'm going to be honest with you. You have been a high school teacher, a journalism advisor, school board member, borough planning commission member, and bookstore proprietor. And when I read a resume like that, I imagine cardigans, fireplaces, wingback chairs, and bifocals. I never see long-distance biking. Can you share the story about how bookstore owner became biker?
And now some of those things, just to be honest, I was on the school board for like 30 seconds. I've been very lucky to be able to be part of the community in so many ways. And I heard an interview on local the Anchorage NPR station with Charles Woolforth talking about people who commute to work all year on their bicycles, and this is a couple of years ago, and I just really love that concept. It was a great idea, and I happened to be the right distance to be introduced to that kind of thing, and I was just thinking of it as a way to reduce my carbon footprint a little bit, and I could ride to work. It's 4.5 miles back and forth, can I do it? And I don't want to spend a lot of money on it and not knowing if I'm really going to do it. So I used my old 20-year-old mountain bike the first
year.
Now,
how long ago was this?
2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And I used my old bike the first year, and I wasn't going to do it. And then, like in October, I almost had to wait till it got cold to make myself start doing it, just because that was such a psychological barrier for me. But I did, and I ended up, and I really enjoyed doing that. I enjoyed the thrill of riding to work in 30-mile-an-hour winds, and immediately the first surprise in this area for me was that it wasn't cold. Once I get moving, I was too warm, if anything else, so I had to learn to strip back and not wear as many layers as I thought. But that was just so much fun and such an adventure, and I've never been a really physically active person, and I needed that. And it just grew, and I did a clean air challenge. Didn't quite make the 100 miles 2 years in a row, and didn't quite make the 100 miles either time. So I'm not a strong rider, I'm not a fast rider, but I am just thrilled by it. It's like a new religious convert. I just really love being on the bike and experiencing the world that way, traveling in a way that you feel like you're in the world and not hidden away behind a glass windows. And then I tried a couple long-distance trips, medium distance from here, from Anchorage to Seward. And again, you know, I had somebody pass me by who was doing that in one day. He was riding on his bike. He zipped by in a blink of an eye. He had a phone in one hand, and he was texting. And he said, "Hi, how you doing? Where are you headed?" And I said, "I'm Seward." And he said, "So am I. Bye." And then, you know, so again, I don't feel like I'm in that world of a real bicyclist yet. But that gave me a flavor of what a long distance, you know, an overnight trip was like.
You also did the Denali Highway ones?
Real adventure.
How long did that take you?
That took me, I started in Glen Allen, or just outside of Glen Allen. And I think it took me about 5 days, 5 or 6 days, and I ended up near Talkeetna. And then Melissa, my wife, took me home from there. And then I've done a lot of weekend ridings up to Hatcher Pass. And my big goal was to make it to the top of Hatcher Pass. And I did that a couple times last summer. And that was a real challenge for me. And I feel like I've had all the road conditions, all the slope challenges that and road, you know, rough roads, easy road. I think I've had, in terms of that, I've had everything that I'm going to get thrown at me for this longer trip that I'm going to take.
Before we go into this longer trip you're going to make, you said something about fitness.
Uh-huh.
You said you were never really a very physically active, fit person, but Palmer knows you as a walker. We could see you walking around town. Describe this fitness that you found with biking. What's different about it?
Well, you know, it's one you kind of, it lets you take your own pace and work as hard as you want to at any time, and it is easier on the ankles and the knees than running, say, and which I'm 60 years old now, and I have running doesn't appeal to me anymore. So it's kind of a great entry into physical activity because it's doable. I mean, yeah.
So this trip. Okay. Let's get back to the trip. You're selling your store.
Mm-hmm.
You're retiring.
Yep.
And you have this big, long-distance trip in mind.
Right.
So, tell us about this trip.
Okay. Well, for the radio audiences, I have maps. And you can see this right here. It's a nice brown color map. Is from the Adventure Cycling Association, so it's specifically made for bicyclists, and it's covering the Lewis and Clark Bicycle Trail, which, you know, doesn't exactly follow the Lewis and Clark Trail, but it gets pretty close. And Lewis and Clark, starting in 1804, at the direction of Thomas Jefferson, explored, really starting in St. Charles, Missouri, near St. Louis, following three river systems, the Missouri and Columbia, and I forget which the other one was, but it's basically from St. Louis to Oregon and Washington. They were in kind of between what is now Oregon and Washington. And, of course, they were going up rafting and canoeing, and they were going in conditions that were very, very different than what I will be doing. But they're, it is an amazing piece of history. I have a lot of questions about it. I have a lot I want to learn about, and I think a lot of us, this is a moment in time where a lot of us want to know what it means to be an American. And maybe traveling on the road, unseparated in a car or what have you, might be one way to get closer to what the strengths and the diversity and even the weaknesses of what this country is and has been and its history and the people. And so I'm hoping that I'll have a lot of stories to tell about people I meet and places, you know, because also what it means to be American is just this amazing, huge landscape. It's so much bigger than life. And so
I'm looking at this map that you have here, and it's dividing the trail into like 30, 40-mile sections.
Yeah.
And the different towns you'll go through and places you can stop. They don't recommend getting off of this map and checking things out. You go through six states.
Well, yeah, there's
Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, Montana, and you're going to end up in Oregon?
Right, yeah.
You remind me, when you're talking about finding what it is to be American, Travels with Cheesem instead of Travels with Charlie.
There you go. There you
are. Do you have a name for your bike, Rocinante?
What, for my bike?
Yeah.
I haven't
John,
thought of that.
John named his pickup. Don Quixote named his horse.
I should name my bike. Well, I'll put that also on my list of things to do to plan for the trip between now and I'm leaving. I'm going to start biking April Fool's Day.
Oh. Is that because of weather or any other moment?
I want to get out early as I can because of weather, because it's going to be very warm in the.
How long do you think it's going to take you?
I think it's going to be a little over 2 months for me. I think, you know, again, that real bikers, they're bikers who could do it in much less.
With a cell phone in their hand.
Right, with a cell phone.
When you go and you meet people, and you said something about being able to see the world without behind a glass.
Right.
And you're part of the world when you travel like that. You're going to hear so many stories of people along the way. Yeah. What story about Palmer are you going to share with them?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's another quintessentially American small town that is trying to coalesce and be vibrant, and it is vibrant. There are conflicts, but there are also lots of points of unity and lots of great people who value community and are forming the community, none of which is a story, but those are I'll have to think more carefully about what stories I have to tell, but I think everywhere you turn, there are people who have given their time to create more than just their own homestead, so to speak, and build the connections to the community. My mother-in-law tells the story, and you know, she's not Palmer. She grew up, she didn't grow up there. She homesteaded outside of Wasilla in 1955. And she was volunteering for the library, the Wasilla Library, before they were finished building the house. And I always thought that meant a lot, because it meant that building your home is not enough. It's building your community is, you know, for her, building the home was not enough. It was also about building the community, and she did that with the library, and that was something.
That's rather moving, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I can put that into words.
Mm, yeah.
Liz. But that's poetry.
Well,
before we finished our house, we started to build the library.
Right.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice story to bring with you.
Yes, yeah. And we think of ourselves as self-sufficient, and we are, and this strong strain of individualism, but individualism doesn't conflict with community. It grows out of community, and community grows out of individualism. They're both intertwined, and they don't exist independently of each other.
Okay. I'm lost, because I think that will be a great thing to reflect on as you go through these little towns.
Yeah.
Is that something that America has in common in the fabric off the highway?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you going to make memory of this? What memorial are you going to have for this trip? Well, are you going to write your own book?
I will be. I don't have a specific goal in mind, but I certainly want to be doing some writing, and I might be doing some blogging. Although I just read now that blogging's supposed to be passé, but I'm passé, you know? I still read books. But I haven't figured that exactly what that is, what that piece is going
to
be.
So let's talk. I want to get back to the trail, but before we do that, I want to talk bikes.
Okay.
Because when you start biking, it becomes more than just two wheels. You started off with your old bike, but I'm assuming you don't have that anymore.
Well, I have it to play with to learn how to repair it and stuff.
Yeah. But you probably even have more than one bike now.
I do.
So how many bikes do you have, and what bike are you taking, and why that bike?
Okay. Well, I have a track road bike, and that's the one I'm taking.
A trek.
And it's and I bought it at Backcountry and tried it out on the Denali Highway on the gravel there, and that was a real good test for it because it was a rough road, a lot of washboard, but the wheels were big enough and strong enough for it, and it has some racks in there, so I have room to take 3 or 4 days worth of food and a bear bag and a tent and sleeping bag and all the things I need.
Steel, aluminum, carbon frame?
It is, I think it's aluminum. I forget which one. Sorry, I don't remember.
Clip-in pedals, not clip-in pedals?
I'm not ready for clip-in pedals. They scare me. And that puts me, I won't be a real biker until I do clip-in pedals, but I'm not in a hurry to do that.
So you have a trek with panniers and...
Yeah. So that's the one bike, and then
now skinny tires, or are you going to go with
it's the widest possible tires you can get on the road bike. I forget the dimensions, but they're not the real skinny tires that you see on racing bikes. They're almost like a mountain bike tire. Yeah, and good knobbly tires. And then I have a regular mountain bike, and I have a fat tire bike.
Oh, so you went fat tire.
Yeah.
When did you do your fat tire?
This year. I went fat tire this year. Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really versatile. And it was a much better, I do have a mountain bike, but it was a much better introduction to trail riding than the mountain bike was for me. Because it just is a lot more comfortable. The hills are...
That fat tire seems to roll over things. I feel much more steady on it than I do a regular mountain bike. Right. I would agree. Your story is like Nike, only in real life. Just do it. Well, at what point, was it a certain bike ride? Was it sitting at home? Was it reading Stephen Ambrose's, Core of Discovery that you said, I want to do this? And I think I can.
I don't know when. I mean, it just kind of evolved that I think I've always wanted to do some kind of, I think when I was younger, I wanted to walk across the country. But I was thinking as I started bicycling that I could bike across the country. And so it just evolved. I don't know. I couldn't tell you when exactly I decided I was going to do it.
I've got another question, not about biking or your trip. What do you think it is that makes people willing to try that? Try something that they've never done before, that they're not, you don't even sound like you're proficient, but you're saying, I'm not even a master at this. I don't even do clip-ins. Right. So what makes a person able to do that?
Well, it's the same thing that I wasn't prepared to open a bookstore 16 years ago. I never had any business experience. It's just something about that says, why not? And I don't have an answer. It's just it's how things get done. We don't get things done because we wait till we're ready for them. Yeah.
Kind of like Lewis and Clark themselves.
Right.
Why not?
Right. Although they were ready in ways that I'm not ready, but on the other hand, they were on territory that was completely foreign to them. They thought they would have a nice straight river, one river route all the way across, and not so much. Yeah, not so much. Yeah. It was much more difficult.
So, which book on Lewis and Clark do you use as your guide?
Well, I have it here for the radio audience. It's a beat up copy of the Journal of Lewis and Clark.
Oh, the real journal.
And I'm looking at the Ambrose book, although there's some good background, but it's a little too sweet for me. The journals themselves are more gritty than the sort of romanticize historical, because he sort of romanticizes things.
He's a great storyteller.
Right.
Brought history to our living rooms again.
Right. And then I have a book that's a Ken Burns companion to the Ken Burns series, which I haven't seen. And but the one I'm going to carry with me is the Lewis and Clark
journals.
Yeah, and so
that would be good to compare your journal to their journal.
Oh yes,
their America to your America.
Right, right. But I can spell better.
Good, it'll read better.
There we go.
Lessons learned. If you were going to say there's a lesson that you've learned from bicycling, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. You know, just be willing to make little trips and adventure. You know, it's not Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. It's Walter Mitty. I mean, I remember these short 4.5-mile rides to the bookstore and you know, with a little bit of wind and a little bit of snow, and in my little delusional mind, I was riding the Iditarod, but it was just a half-hour ride, but enjoy that adventure and build on it and enjoy it.
Do you listen to anything, podcasts?
While I'm riding, no.
It's just you and the open road,
right?
On your bike, that's nameless for now.
The nameless bike, yes, yeah. Yeah, and who knows, it after a couple of months of writing, it might not be a nice name.
Well, Mr. Cheesham, I thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
I really look forward to the follow-up interview your return. If you go April, May, June, or July, we should meet again.
There we go.
And I know you'll have some poetry for me.
There we go.
And metaphors, and I can't wait to hear your stories. Let's talk logistics. How long have you been planning for this trip? What goes into a trip this long?
Well, the real planning I have barely begun on. I'm going to take these maps, and I am going to look at the route that the Adventure Cycling Association suggests. I'm going to research the places and make decisions about, make guesses about where I'm going to stop each night, and I'm going to write it out for each map, and maybe even get on Google Maps with a satellite view and get a picture of it on some of the ways. But I'm going to spend the next couple weeks doing that, and I'm doing things like I'm highlighting on the big atlas I'm leaving with Melissa, so that she can see what the plan is, but and then all that'll be uploaded on the electronically as well. But the
are you bringing a laptop, or are you doing this all on your phone?
Bringing a phone, and I do have a Garmin bike computer that I can put the route in, and that's a GPS that I'll use as kind of a backup and a way to see how long I've gone each day and that kind of thing. So that's the planning. Of course, the Adventure Cycling Association is just so wonderful because they have these great maps, and they have a list of bike shops and campgrounds all the way, and lots of history. So that's part of the planning, and the other part is, you know, the research, the reading. I'm reading more about Lewis and Clark and that kind of thing. But I have just about a month to get all that together, and the packing, figuring out how I'm going to pack the bike, figure what I'm going to take, and eventually I'm going to figure out which pannier is going to have what, and make sure the weight is equal. And there's kind of a science to that. You want the one side of the bike that you're always going to lean up against something, so that if it falls, it doesn't fall on the sensitive parts of the bike. And so you want your accessible stuff on the other side, and all of this planning to figure out how much weight and you know how to do that, have the weight right, and have the what's accessible and what's not so accessible. You know, little things like that I'm just going to have to figure out. And I'll probably start making a list of things to bring, and I'll have to figure out what I can do without and crossing things off that list. And
yeah, because when I'm looking at these maps, and they break them down into little parts, but you're going to go through, like, White Cloud, population 176, by the Iowa Indian Reservation, and then you're going to Rulo, 172. If you don't plan your meals, you're only going to get chips.
Right. There's one point and later, not on that map that you're looking at, but on the Lolo Trail that I think is 130 miles.
That's in Montana.
Yeah. And that, they say, depending on the weather conditions, I might not even have water. So I'll need to take enough water for those miles for a couple of days.
Well, I don't know. I'm becoming concerned. I have Sparks, no services. White Cloud, no services. Wood Heights, no services.
Right.
Fibbard, no services.
Right.
This is just a sample of one page. I think you really are going to experience Lewis and Clark more than you know.
And I talked about conditions. I think one of the conditions that I am not used to in Alaska is snakes. So I'm going to be thinking about how I'm going to walk in the woods and making plenty of noise and pounding the ground so that the snakes hear me before.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And ticks.
And ticks. Yeah. We all love snakes and ticks.
Hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I thought about humidity, but not snakes and ticks.
Yeah, well, then humidity. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't go.
Now that you talk about it, you're right. There's no services.
No
snakes and ticks.
No, it's just, you know, you carry enough with you and it'll be all right. Yeah.
So, Lewis and Clark, which one are you?
Well, I'm neither one. I mean, both of them were real trail real wilderness experts and had a whole lifetime of experience in the wilderness, and they were really at home on the outside and everything. But of the two, that I think reading their journals, Lewis had some passages that I really appreciated. His description of some of the waterfalls just the awe that he expressed in seeing some of this landscape. He was able to do that in ways that Clark wasn't. But they were both, fascinating people and complex. But Lewis, I think, had a way of expressing himself on the page that was really, really moving and fascinating.
So you have your MFA, your Master's in Fine Art.
In creative writing.
In creative writing. So will your journals try to match day, place by place with Lewis's?
I don't think I haven't figured out what stance I'll take, or, they'll be different. They'll be, the journey that I'm taking is so different. It's not a journey of discovery, or at least discovering. I'm not discovering land. I'm not carving out new trails, and so the approach I'll take would be very different than someone who's assigned a duty to record. But I think there's a range of questions. There are personal questions about the challenge of doing the bicycle ride, and then there's larger questions I would try to deal with about where are we as a country right now? What does it mean to be an American? And assuming I have any energy left by the time I've ridden 50 to 100 miles a day, I would like to explore some of those questions.
I have a feeling that perhaps the trail itself is almost as intriguing to you as the bicycle trip.
But the bicycle trip is pretty intriguing to me. Yeah. Yeah.
I could have talked for hours with Mr. Cheesham. I'm not sure what was more impressive for me, the fact that he is so nonchalant about his bikes and biking, because typically people who invest that type of money and time into bikes usually know what type of bike they have. Or am I more impressed with his commitment to what is really an epic type adventure on just that, a bike? I'm just glad as he travels along the Lewis and Clark Trail discovering America, America gets the chance to discover Cheesem. He represents us well. I'll be talking to Mr. Cheesem along the trail this spring and again when he returns home, leaving those ticks and snakes behind, thank you very much, with his own Ron Sinante and a story to tell. I hope you tune in. Until then, this has been Emily Forstner on Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. Thanks for listening.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.